In the Christian system, the fourth initiation is indicated by the suffering in the Garden of Gethsemane, the crucifixion and the resurrection of the Christ. This initiation differs from the others in that it has the double aspect of suffering and victory, hence a series of events has been employed to represent it. The type of suffering, which accompanies the initiation, clears off any arrears of karma which may still stand in the initiate's way. The patience and joyousness with which he endures them have great value in the strengthening of his character, and help to determine the extent of his usefulness in the work which lies before him. The initiate has to experience for a moment the condition called avicii, which means the waveless, that, page 207, which is without vibration. The man stands absolutely alone in space, and feels cut off from all life, even from that of the Logos. It is without doubt the most ghastly experience that it is possible for any human being to have. It seems to have two results: 1, that the candidate may be able to sympathize with those to whom avicii comes as a result of their actions, and 2, that he may learn to stand cut off from everything external, and test and realize his own utter certainty that he is one with the Logos, and that any such feeling of loneliness must be but an illusion. Avicii for the black magician corresponds to nirvana for the white adept. Both of these types of men, antithesis of each other, are yogis, and each gets the, page 314, result of the law he has followed. One attains the kaivalyam, realization of oneness, complete isolation, of avicii, the other the kaivalyam of nirvana. For the arhat, while still in the physical body, the consciousness of the buddhic plane is his, this being its normal home. In fact, to stand at the level of the arhat involves the power fully to use the buddhic vehicle. When the arhat draws himself up into the buddhic plane, it must not be supposed that manas is in any way lost. For he draws up manas with him into that expression of manas which has all the time existed on the buddhic plane but has not been fully vivified until now. He still remains triple, but instead of being on the three planes, he is now on two, with Atma developed on its own plane, Buddhi on its own plane, and manas level with Buddhi, drawn up into the intuition. Then he discards the causal body, because he has no further need of it. When he wishes to come down again and manifest on the mental plane, he has to make a new causal body, but otherwise he does not need one. Much in the same way, at a later stage, the Buddhi and the glorified intellect will be drawn up into the atmic plane, and the triple spirit will be fully vivified. Then the three manifestations will converge into one. That is a power within the reach of the adept, because, as we shall see in due course, he unifies the monad and the ego, just as the disciple is trying to unite the ego with the personality. This drawing up of the higher manas from the causal body, so that it is on the buddhic plane side by side with the Buddhi, is the aspect or condition of the ego which H.P. Blavatsky called the spiritual ego, which is Buddhi plus the manasic aspect of the one, which was drawn up into Buddhi when the causal vehicle was cast aside. That state, that of the arhat, is called by Christian mystics that of spiritual illumination, of the Christ in man. H.P. Blavatsky has also a classification in which he speaks of four divisions of the mind, page 315, page 208, 1, manas dajasi, the resplendent or illuminated manas, which is really Buddhi, or at least that state of man when his manas has become merged in Buddhi, having no separate will of its own. 2, manas proper, the higher manas, the abstract thinking mind. 3, antakarana, the link of channel or bridge between the higher manas and karma manas during incarnation. 4, karma manas which, on this theory, is the personality. When the arhat leaves the physical body in sleep or trance, he passes at once into the unutterable glory of the nirvanic plane. His daily effort is now to reach further and further up into the nirvanic plane, up the five lower sub-planes on which the human ego has being. He has a number of planes open to him, and can focus his consciousness at any particular level he chooses, although there will always be a background of the buddhic and nirvanic consciousness. Even at the atmic level, there is a sheath of some sort for the spirit, for in one sense it seems as though it were an atom, and yet in another it seems to be the whole plane. The man feels as if he were everywhere, but could focus anywhere within himself, and wherever for a moment the outpouring of force diminishes, that is for him a body. The Arhat has to work at the casting off of the remaining 5 of the 10 great fetters, which are colon, 6, Ruparage desire for beauty of form, or for physical existence in a form, even including that in the heaven world. 7, Aruparaga, desire for formless life. 8, Manopride. 9, Udaccha, agitation or irritability, the possibility of being disturbed by anything. 10, Avijja, ignorance. The Arhat initiation may be thought of as a halfway between the first and the fifth initiations. On the first half of the path, from the first to the, page 316, fourth initiation, the man is busy shaking himself free from those personal limitations, from the illusion of it. On the second half, he is engaged in page 209, releasing himself from the illusion of you. It is usually said that 7 lives are occupied, in the average case, at normal times, between the first and fourth initiations, and 7 lives also between the fourth and fifth. But these figures are capable of very great reduction or increase. In most cases the actual period is not very great, since usually the lives are taken in immediate succession, without interludes in the heaven world. The Arhat, whose ego is working perfectly in the causal body, need not incarnate again in a physical body, and go through the wearisome round of birth and death, which is so unpleasant at any rate, from the point of view of the ego himself. He must, however, descend as far as the astral plane. While in the astral body, he may at any moment that he chooses enjoy the nirvanic consciousness. If he is in the physical body, he can reach that nirvanic consciousness only when he leaves the body in sleep or trance, as already explained above. Nirvanic consciousness means consciousness anywhere in the solar system. The fifth initiation makes a man a master, an adept, a superman. The Buddhists call him the Asaka, literally, the not disciple, because he has no more to learn, and has exhausted the possibilities of the human kingdoms of nature. The Hindus speak of him as the Jivanmukta, a liberated life, a free being, because his will is one with the universal will, that of the one without a second. He stands ever in the light of nirvana, even in his waking consciousness, should he choose to remain on earth in a physical body. When out of that, he rises still higher into the monadic plane, beyond not merely our words but our thought. As the secret doctrine expresses it, the adept begins his samadhi on the atmic plane, all planes below the atmic being one to him. Page 317, a man attains adeptship when he raises his ordinary consciousness to the nirvanic level. The fact that differentiates him, and makes him an adept, is that he has unified the monad with the ego. And, since he has become one with the monad, he has already reached the level of the third or lowest manifestation of the deity or logos. In Christian symbolism, the ascension and the descent of the Holy Spirit stand for the attainment of adeptship, for the adept does ascend above humanity, beyond this earth, although, if he chooses, as did the Christ, he may return to teach and help. As he ascends, he becomes one with the Holy Spirit, and invariably the first thing he does, with his new power, is to pour it down upon his disciples, even as the Christ poured down tongues of fire upon the heads of his followers at the Feast of Pentecost. At the Asaka initiation, the Atma is seen as a clear light, a star, and, when it spreads out, at the last breaking down of the wall, it becomes the infinite light. Before that, the Arhat can feel the underlying peace of Atma when in meditative mood, but constantly he returns to the sorrow. But when a man rises to the atmic plane in full consciousness, and the Buddhic, page 210, consciousness merges into that, there is but one light seen. This is expressed in the voice of the silence, the three that dwell in glory and in bliss ineffable, now in the world of Maya have lost their names. They have become one star, the fire that burns but scorches not, that fire which is the upadi of the flame. While the man was in the causal body, he saw the sacred three separate, but now he sees them as the three aspects of the triple Atma. Buddhi and Manas, which were twins upon a line in the buddhic consciousness of the previous stage, are now one with Atma, the fire which is the vehicle of the monadic flame. Then says the teacher, Where is thy individuality, Lanu? Where the Lanu himself? It is the spark lost in the fire, the drop within the ocean. The ever-present ray become the all and the eternal radiance. Page 318, he who was a disciple is now a master. He stands in the center, and the driplet radiates from him. The adept has the power to get at any knowledge that he wants, almost in a moment. He can make himself one with it, and get at the core of it instantly, and then observe the surrounding details as he may require them. Somewhere on the Buddhic or Nirvanic plane, he would grasp the idea that lies at the back, for example, of any particular science or department of knowledge and make himself one with that. Then, from that point of view, he would reach down into any details he might require. A master does not appear to need all the knowledge stored within his brain as we do, but is able to turn a certain faculty onto anything that is wanted, and, by the use of that faculty, then and there, to know all about it. He would not need to read up a subject, but he would turn his all-seeing eye on the subject, and thereby somehow absorb the knowledge. This may be the explanation of getting rid of avidya, ignorance. With the Buddhic faculty, as we have seen, it is no longer necessary to collect facts from outside, but one plunges into the consciousness of anything, whether it be mineral or plant or deva, etc., and understands it from inside. H. P. Blavatsky has pointed out that a master's physical body is a mere vehicle. It hands nothing on, but is simply a point of contact with the physical plane, a body kept as an instrument, needed for the work he does, and dropped when done with. The same consideration applies to the astral and mental bodies. The masters aid, in countless ways, the progress of humanity. From the highest sphere, they shed down on all the world light and life, that may be taken up and assimilated, as freely as the sunshine, by all who are receptive enough to take it in. As the physical world lives by the life of God, focused by the sun, so does the spiritual world live by that same life, focused by the occult hierarchy. Page 319. Certain masters are specially connected with religions, and use these religions as reservoirs, into which they pour spiritual energy, to be distributed to the faithful in each religion through the duly appointed means of grace. Page 211. Then there is the great intellectual work, wherein the masters send out thoughts of a high intellectual power, to be caught up by men of genius, assimilated by them and given out to the world. On this level, also, they send out their wishes to their disciples, notifying them of the tasks to which they should set their hands. In the lower mental world, the masters generate the thought forms which influence the concrete mind, and guide it along useful lines of activity in this world, and teach those who are living in the heavenly world. In the intermediate world, they undertake the work of the helping of the so-called dead, generally direct and supervise the teaching of the younger pupils, and send out aid in numberless cases of need. In the physical world, they watch the tendencies of events, correct and neutralize, so far as law permits, evil currents, constantly balance forces that work for and against evolution, strengthening the good and weakening the evil. They work also in conjunction with the angels and devas of the nations, guiding the spiritual forces as the others guide the material. The whole earth is divided into special areas, each in the charge of a master. These areas, consisting of huge countries or even continents, correspond somewhat to parishes in the church organization. Thus one adept may be said to be in charge of Europe, another looks after India, and so on. The adept has all the different grades and forms of evolution to regard, not only humanity, but also the great kingdom of the angels and devas, the various classes of nature spirits, the animals, vegetables and minerals, the elemental kingdoms, and many others of which so far nothing has been heard by mankind. A large part of the work of the adepts lies at levels far beyond the physical as they are engaged, page 320, in pouring out their own power, and also the force from the great store filled by the nirmankars. It is the karma of the world that it shall have a certain amount of this uplifting force at its service. On account of this, humanity is evolving as a unit, the fact of brotherhood enabling everyone to make much more progress, than would be even remotely possible were he standing entirely by himself. The Great White Brotherhood rays out the supply of force from the Great Reservoir upon all egos, without exception, on the higher mental plane, thus giving the greatest possible assistance to the unfolding of the indwelling life. Whilst an adept may ray out his force upon enormous numbers of people, running often into many millions simultaneously, yet such is the wonderful quality of this power, which he pours forth, that it adapts itself to each one of these millions, as though he were the only object of its influence, and it appears as though what, for us, would be full attention, were being given to that one. Page 212. This arises from the fact that the Master's nirvanic or atmak consciousness is a kind of point, which yet includes the entire plane. He can bring that point down through several planes, and spread it out like a kind of bubble. On the outside of that huge sphere are all the causal bodies, which he is trying to affect, and he, filling the sphere, appears all in all to each individual. In this way, he fills with his life the ideals of millions of people, and is for them respectively the ideal Christ, the ideal Rama, the ideal Krishna, an angel, or perhaps a spirit guide. In this department of their work, the masters frequently take advantage of special occasions, and of places where there is some strong magnetic center, where some holy man has lived and died, or where some relic of such a person creates a suitable atmosphere. They take advantage of such conditions, and cause their own force to radiate along the channels already, page 321 prepared. When some vast assemblage of pilgrims comes together in a receptive attitude, again they take advantage of the occasion, by pouring their forces out upon the people, through the channels by means of which they have been taught to expect help and blessing. Another example of the methods of work of the masters at the causal level is afforded in the case of talismans, which a master may link with his own causal body, so that its influence will last through the ages. This was done with certain physical objects, buried at various points of future importance, by Apollonius of Tyana. The adept having become one with the third aspect of the Logos, manifesting on the plane of Atma, his next step is to become one with that aspect which is represented by the Christ in the bosom of the Father. Later on, it may be presumed that he will draw ever nearer and nearer to the deity of the solar system. When human life is completed, the perfected man usually drops his various material bodies, but he retains the power to take up any of them, if ever he should need them in the course of his work. In the majority of cases, one who gains that level no longer needs a physical body. He no longer retains an astral, a mental, or even a causal body, but lives permanently at his highest level. Of those who attain adeptship, comparatively few remain on our earth as members of the occult hierarchy, as will be explained more fully presently. Beyond the fifth or Aseka initiation, the higher path opens up in seven great ways, among which the adept must take his choice. These seven are as follows: 1. He may enter into the blissful omniscience and omnipotence of Nirvana with activities far beyond our knowing, to become, perhaps, in some future world, an avatara, or divine incarnation. This is sometimes called taking the Dharmakaya vesture. The Dharmakaya keeps nothing below the monad, though what the vesture of the monad may be on its own plane we do not know. Page 322 Page 213 2. He may enter on the spiritual period a phrase covering unknown meanings, among them probably that of taking the Sampogakaya vesture. He retains his manifestation as a triple spirit, and probably can reach down and show himself in a temporary or guides. 3. He may become part of that treasure house of spiritual forces, on which the agents of the Logos draw for their work, taking the Nirmanakaya vesture. The Nirmanakaya appears to preserve his or guides, that is, his causal body, and keeps all his permanent atoms, and therefore has the power to show himself at whichever level he chooses. The Nirmanakayas are spoken of in the voice of the silence as forming a guardian wall, which preserves the world from further and far greater misery and sorrow. 4. He may remain a member of the occult hierarchy, which rules and guards the world in which he has reached perfection. V. He may pass on to the next chain, to aid in building up its forms. Vi, he may enter the splendid angel or deva evolution. 7. He may give himself to the immediate service of the Logos, to be used by him in any part of the solar system, his servant and messenger, who lives but to carry out his will, and do his work over the whole of the system which he rules. This is called joining the staff. It seems to be considered a very hard path, perhaps the greatest sacrifice open to the adept, and is therefore as carrying with it great distinction. A member of the general staff has no physical body, but makes one for himself by Kriyashakti, the power to make of the matter of the globe to which he is sent. The staff contains beings at very different levels, from that of Ahatship upwards. Above the initiation of the adept lies the sixth initiation, that of Chakan, word which means, page 323, Lord. The same word is used also for the heads of rays 3-7. The ray to which an adept belongs affects not only his appearance, but also that work that he has to do. The following table sets out briefly certain facts regarding the rays, page 214, ray head of ray characteristics of ray remarks 1 Chahan Moya strength. The master Jupiter is also on this ray, and is the guardian of India. He is a great student of the abstruse.